It used to be chill. It's all up in smoke. I think I'm still fun. Parenting's a joke.
Hello, listeners. This is Parenting is a Joke. I'm a basket of single socks named Ophira Eisenberg. And on the show, we bring together professional funny people to talk about their career, being creative, and how they are managing the unpredictability of a creative career with the unpredictability of raising kids. How the fuck are they doing it? My son, by the way, asked me, who do I love more, him or my husband? And I said, I love you differently. I love you because I made you, and I love Dad in a different way because I chose him. And then we were talking about DNA, and then he said, wait a second, so if I came from your body, why do I have some of Dad's DNA? And I was like, oh, fuck, what is happening? So I said, because part of Dad is needed to make you. And he goes, what part? And listeners, I just went, a sperm from a male is needed to fertilize a female egg. And then my son said, well, where does the sperm come from? Good question. So I just said, an adult man's penis. And my son started going, gross, and laughing. What? Oh, gross. And I said, it is gross. So happy Valentine's, everyone. On today's episode, I talk to comedian Adam Caton Holland, and he shares some nightly slights from his two sons.
Every night, my wife and I switch which kid we're putting down. And my boys just want mom, and they're competitive about it. And so at dinner, whoever's night is the mom's night, they will go, mama's night for me, to the other one to like rub it in their face.
More with me and Adam Caton Holland right after these messages from who knows?
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, we made it! We made it from January gloom into February gloom. What's next? Valentine's! Oh, heart gloom. Awesome. You know, you'll hear a little later that Adam Caton Holland and I talk about mental health as I'm talking about gloom here. We talk about mental health. We talk also about OCD. And I'm just going to be very transparent here. I'm sure you've heard it from me before. I suffer from depression. I've mostly dealt with it through talk therapy. I've been in therapy for 15 years and no progress. No progress. Well, here's the thing. Anytime I say to my therapist, hey, I don't really feel like we're making a lot of progress, what do they say back? They say, you just got to keep coming. Oh, yeah? Interesting. Sounds like a pyramid scheme, does it not? Just keep coming. I want some markers. I want to know I'm making progress. I want a system. I want, I don't know, how about badges? How about stars on a little piece of paper? How about karate belts? How about that? How about a karate belt system as you go through therapy to mark your progress, right? So you could be like, my mother's a narcissist. And they're like, purple belt. That is right. You get a purple belt. My therapist says I have PTSD. Doesn't everybody? Seriously. I mean, different degrees. We're all walking on the same planet. Have not we all survived a terrible car crash as a kid that has put us in an ongoing state of hypervigilance? No? Just me? Oh, got it. Got it. So, yeah. So we do talk therapy. But recently, she suggested that I try, get this, everyone, ketamine. A ketamine therapy. Ketamine, Special K, a horse tranquilizer. Yep. It sounded a little severe to me. I mean, we have only been talking up until this point. And now all of a sudden she's bringing in ketamine. I was like, okay, are you just admitting defeat? Like, are you just giving up? And you're like, you know what? We've done trying all of this. So why don't we just go straight to pumping me full with a powerful sedative intended for a 900-pound equine to see if I finally relax? Is that the plan? There's no steps in between. Like, how are you doing today? In a K-hole? No acupuncture? I don't know, staring at a light or something? Okay, cool. Zoloft? You don't want to throw that into the mix? Wow. You know what I think, everybody? I think my therapist wants to do ketamine. Actually, she admitted that she wants to do ketamine, and I don't want to be her buddy. I do not want to do ketamine for the first time with my therapist. Boring. No, if I'm going to do Special K, I'm doing it on my own time. I'm doing it in a setting it was intended, like with a bunch of shirtless Dutch guys at a nightclub in Aruba. That would make me relax. We're kind of ruining drugs. You know, I don't take drugs, just to be clear, but if I were to, again, we have taken the fun out of them. It's interesting that hallucinogens and psychedelics are used in a therapy setting, but it's not fun. So many of my friends are microdosing mushrooms for their anxiety. And one friend was even like, yeah, it makes me so much better at the office. I was like, what? You're doing shrooms wrong. You're not supposed to eat magic mushrooms and be like, I love Excel spreadsheets. You're supposed to have an epiphany. You're supposed to see through the garbage and be like, fuck capitalism, fuck the man. You're not supposed to be like, that was a great meeting with HR. Okay, we're ruining drugs. Listen, I'm all about mental health, but I'm starting to think maybe some of the therapy stuff is kind of bullshitty, and maybe we just need to all just drop our schedules, get a bag of mushrooms, hang out on a meadow for a day with some smart friends, and don't document any of it. What do you say? Who's in? And then I remember I'm a parent. I can't hire a babysitter for 3 days. I mean, I could, but I'm not going to put that kind of money aside for this. No, I'm just going to complain into a microphone. Coming up, I talk about creating parenting and mental health with Adam Caton Holland. And that happens right now. My guest today is a great comedian who has a new comedy special called Wallpaper. It just came out. He is also the best-selling author of the tragic comedy memoir, Tragedy Plus Time. And he is one-third of the comedy trio, The Grolix, who have a monthly live show, a podcast. And he must be super exhausted because he has two little kids. How did I even get him here? It is Adam Caton Holland. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me here and reading all those accolades. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Just to, you know, set the stage, what is the stage of parenting you are at for our listeners? How old are your kids?
I'm at the final stage. I'm going to quit probably in a month. No, my kids are five and two boys. Mm. So the five-year-old is in preschool and the two-year-old is, you know, and we've got them at a class-ish thing a couple days a week where parents hang in the lobby. You can go run an errand real quick, you know what I mean? But it's 2 hours and 2 days a week. It's very little relief.
Yeah. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And I think it's like 10 in the morning where you are in Denver right now. So
Mountain Standard Time. And that's what I'm here to talk about is mountain time. I'd like to talk about this time zone.
I grew up in that time zone, so I know your time zone.
Wait, where'd
I'm
you grow
familiar.
Up? Where'd you grow
Calgary,
up?
Calgary, Alberta.
Straight up north.
That's right. So 10 a.m. Denver, you've been with two kids, five and two. You've been up, what, 6 hours?
Let's see. They're pretty good, actually. Seven. They woke up. We get up at seven every morning. So that's pretty
good. That's
solid.
Amazing.
Yeah. We went all in on the sleep training. Like, the first kid was a nut for 8 months. And then we broke down and hired what we call a sleep witch. And she told us several things we were doing wrong. And instantly.
What were you doing wrong?
It was like, basically she told us, you know, put the kid down in their room. And she said they would cry. And she's like, sit in the chair with them in the room for a minute, face them, and then say, okay, I'm going. And then like get up and leave. And then night two, sit in the room, don't face them. And then night three, take away the chair, you're gone.
Good night moon.
It was wild. And suddenly our eldest Malcolm was sleeping like a champion. And we worship at the altar of her. And then when we had our second, we called her months in advance and we're just like, tell us what to do. Tell us how to do everything. And our little man has all sorts of, he's a crazy little dude, but he sleeps like a champ. So,
That changes everything. You know, you talk about in your special wallpaper, one of the reasons it is named that, or the reason it's named that, is because once you have kids, you become the supporting character in your life. Therefore, you are the wallpaper. So, you know, here you are, a comic. You just put out a special. It's not like you are putting your dreams on hold. But do you think, as parents, we should dial down our story, what we need to accomplish?
I don't think you should just not change and be like, sorry, I'm the same. I have the same drive as always. And you're going to come along for the damn ride. Like, I do think if you don't pull back a little bit, then I think you're doing it wrong. Like, if you're just like, it's just fine. Like, nothing's really changed. Then you're a monster because you're not paying enough attention.
I think naively, I thought my life would be similar. And so it was just a very harsh awakening to being like, oh no, absolutely not.
And on so many levels, like, you know, when my wife and I decided to have children, and we fortunately decided that we were in that lucky position, but like, she's always really wanted to be a mom. That's always been her drive. And I was almost floored by her when I first met her, because I was a big feminist mom and hyphenated last name. And I was just like, you can't just want to be a mom. Like, I always thought, but then I was like, no, there's such freedom in that. And I really loved that's what she wanted to be, exclusively that. And she's like, that's what I am. And so I was like, that's great. And so I thought we would have very much a launch into, cool, I'm going to go conquer the world and be a comedian. You're going to lock down the home front and really like blossom into motherhood and have everything you ever wanted. And then it's like, yeah, but also she is a person who needs time away from the children. Yes. Yeah. If I go away for 3 days, it's not like she's still on mom duty when I come home. It's like, here you go. They're yours. And I'm going to go be a human being and have a break. And it just things like that. And I mean, remember the first year my wife got to a point where she's like, I got to pull back. I got to have some time for myself. I'm losing my damn mind.
Yep.
I think if you were to interview my wife, she would say, I thought I would be alpha mom. I would crush it. It would be such an easy transition. And then you're like, no, I got to remember I'm a person as well.
Right. And from your point of view, you know, you're like, great, I'm going to go out there and conquer the comedy front. I am just assuming, but you react to this as you may, that there was also part of you going like, wait a second, maybe I want to check out these children that I brought in and be part of their life in a way that is going to get in the way of me traveling and staying up at night and doing a million shows.
Totally. Like, you want... I miss them immediately. Like, okay, I'll be honest. The first day, I'm like, this is pretty great. Like, I'll go have a good meal. I'm by myself. I can sleep in, whatever.
On a tour or something. Yeah.
But it's literally day, you know, and day two means 14 hours later. I'm like, oh man, I miss these little dudes. I want to be with these little dudes. So it's changed. And like now, you know, if I get booked on a club weekend, I'll be like, can we shave the Thursday? Can we just do Friday, Saturday? Can I leave Saturday night? Can I get up Sunday morning early and get the first flight? Just optimizing hours and trying to get back as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
And then your time, your leisure time is like, all right, I got to go. Like, I have a ritual. I get my wife coffee beans from wherever we go. So it's like, all right, I got to go find a cool coffee shop, get my wife some beans. I got to get the boys a treat. Like, you're just even thinking about like what to bring them home.
I could literally publish a book of like the best things to get your kid at airports around America.
right? I had to dial it back because I kept getting them toys.
Yes.
Our house is any house. It's full of crap. Too many toys everywhere. And you get home and they're just like, where is it? And they're going through your bag. And you're like, you know what? You're getting a little treat. I'm getting you a chocolate something somewhere. And that's enough.
I do remember, like, I made the, just again, naive mistake where I think my kid was 2 or something like that. And I brought back, like, 3 stuffed animals. And as I was talking to some other random stranger, I was like, oh, yeah, I got to get my kid a toy because it's the first time I've been away. And they're like, oh, a 2-year-old? You can give him the, like, pretzels from the plane.
Right.
And I was like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I mentioned you're in Denver. You born and raised, right?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Denver. I lived a bunch of other places, but I kept coming back.
And why is that?
Honestly, when I was little, maybe you can relate with Calgary, I don't know, but it felt like my friends and I were like, we got to get out of here. It felt like a cow town.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just kind of like, you know, there's a real Western heritage here. And it's just like, I don't know, I want to be in New York City. And then we all kind of went out to college. And Denver just kind of kept getting cooler and cooler and growing and bigger. And every time we came back, we're like, this is not so bad. You can like get a house here and stuff like that. I'm simultaneously the old hipster bitching about how like you should have been here back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy who would have fled if it doesn't have all these cool restaurants and stuff now.
And so you started comedy there as well, I take it.
Yeah. So like I graduated college. I lived a few places. And then I moved to Chicago because I was like, that's what comedy is. But I didn't know that it was stand up that I wanted. So I was doing stuff at Second City and I was like,
okay,
sketch and improv. And I liked it, but I didn't love it. And then I was trying to write for this newspaper. I kept submitting articles to this alt weekly in Denver. And eventually they published one and then another. And then they're like, do you want a job? And it was the only lead I had going. So I moved back for that. And then I started stand up like the next week at an open mic in Denver. And that was 20 years ago.
Okay. And I mean, I'm sure the scene has changed and blossomed exponentially as well.
For sure. For sure. It always had this one really good club, Comedy Works, which is still there and is a real jewel in the comedy club world. My friends and I kind of started doing indie shows because we didn't really see what it was that we wanted in comedy. So we just sort of, you know,
did your own thing.
DIY it, just find a place that lets you perform, and things grew and grew and grew. And yeah. It's really become a cool scene.
You were a comedy group with 2 other people, the Growlix.
There's a certain like hubris in being like, I'm from Denver and I want to make it big time. But none of us wanted to leave Denver either. So it was kind of like this weird shared delusion / confidence that maybe we could get it done. So we just worked our asses off and made sketches and wrote scripts and eventually sold a TV show. We kind of, you know, shouted loud enough from Denver that people started listening. I still work with those guys. We have this podcast, The Growlix Saves the World, and we're always working on projects together trying to sell scripts and stuff. And it's great. It's like it's like 15 years probably working with those guys.
Do they have families?
Yep. Ben's got a 19-year-old kid, which is wild, who I just watched grow up. And Andrew's kiddo is like 13. So I'm the young dad. I have the young kids.
Oh, you're the one that came in late.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're fuck up, so they had their kids early, I thought, I like to say.
That's how I look at it, too. Yeah. I mean, now I kind of go like, oh, I wish I was a fuck up. Why? Why was I so responsible? It could have been so much easier now.
They're like, you know, mid-40s and one kid's out of the house.
Done.
I'm just like, yeah, dude, that looks pretty nice.
Did you always want to be a dad?
I never thought I wouldn't. You know what I mean? It wasn't my drive, but I always, I love kids. I mean, right when I moved back and I was trying to write for that newspaper, I was freelancing for the newspaper, started stand-up comedy. So to pay the bills, I started substitute teaching. And I really...
Oh my God, that's hard.
It sucked. All you need is a college degree in Denver. Like, that's it. So you can be a sub.
I think everywhere. I don't even know if you need that in New York.
I think you're right. But I really found, and I had like volunteered a lot in high school, and I speak Spanish, and I just like, I found I enjoyed little kids and was really good with little kids. So I started doing like ECE classes, like 4-year-olds. And teachers early childhood education.
Oh, okay.
And there's a huge Hispanic population. I speak Spanish. So I was getting a lot of work. And like once teachers found out I was halfway decent and could speak Spanish, they'd be like, hey, I'm going to go on vacation. Will you take 2 weeks of my entire time, I was like, sure. So I'd have whole classes. And then one teacher who I subbed for a lot basically was hiring me to be his classroom assistant the next year. And I took the job. And then 2 days later, the newspaper is like, hey, we have a full-time position. And I had to bail and go to the newspaper because I wanted to write and be creative.
You left the kids behind.
I left the kids behind, 100%. Point of that story is I really like kids. And I was like enjoying it. And I, so even at 24, I was like, I like kids a lot. This is adorable.
Okay. So you're like, I have a natural tendency for this. And so I'll redeem myself later.
You know, exactly. And I also taught every grade. So I'd teach middle school. I'd teach high school. And they're like, middle school's the worst. That's when children are
their
cruelest.
I was terrible. And I think in general, I fall into like pretty good as a teenager. And I
Me
was
too.
Terrible.
Me too. I think it's because you don't have sex, but you have burgeoning sexual feelings. You don't have drugs or alcohol like teenagers who just go for it.
Right.
So you're in this like suspended adolescence, and
you have no idea who you are.
You have no idea who you are. You're having really adult feelings, and your only outlet is cruelty. That's the only way that you can burn off this anxiety. So you're just cruel. We'll see how I am as a parent to that age, because I certainly wasn't a good substitute teacher to that age.
You have an early education child. Are you using your skills?
I don't know. I think any parent is like, I could do better, because you find yourself just getting frustrated at the end of the day after, you know, that's the thing about parenting. There's no back patting. There's no anyone saying good job. Maybe your partner occasionally, but you can be perfect for 8 hours. And then the kid saying why for the 100th time and throwing the toy and hitting the other kid in the face with it when they know you're not supposed to. Literally, they know. And they'll say sorry. And you just snap. And you're like, that was terrible. So like, you always think you could do better, you know?
Always. Were you a good kid?
You know, I did drink and party in high school, but my parents had no idea. Because I was like straight A student, top of the class. The first time they even got wind of it is when I got like a ticket for drinking at a party, and they were like, who are you? And I was like, oh, I've got another life you don't know about.
Did they not know because that was just a general parenting style, or did you have lots of other just a focus that was their focus divided?
You know, I don't know why they didn't know. It wasn't like I was doing it a ton. But I would go to parties on the weekend, and we would, you know, from like 16 to 18 in high school, the goal was to try to find drugs and alcohol every Friday and Saturday night, and to try to find parties and to try to find girls, and just a typical American bored youth.
I mean, I feel like that's what we did too. So I'm going to go with Canadian. Maybe it's the West. Maybe it's the
North
longitude line we are.
Yeah, it's just like, and that was normal. It was almost abnormal to not try to do that stuff.
Yes. Now, you wrote a memoir. Your memoir is called Tragedy Plus Time, a Tragicomic Memoir. And in it, you talk about your family and mental health. Your sister struggled with depression and OCD. I read also that you struggled with OCD. I mean, did you worry about managing your mental health when you and your wife were talking about having kids?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll tell the listeners that my sister killed herself. And so it was, more than a struggle. She lost her struggle. And thank you. But it is what it is. And myself and my older sister, that was my little sister who died. Mm-hmm. But we all kind of had the same, just like OCD, neurotic, anxious tendencies growing up. And in college, my mental health was sort of deteriorating a little bit. And like, I sort of saw the dark side that my sister eventually sort of lost herself to. I was able at 20 or so to like pull back. And now I've kind of like harnessed these tendencies almost for good. I'm just like organized and clean and like get it done. And yeah, I checked the stove 40 times, but whatever. Is that the worst thing? The stove's off. But when I had kids, you do worry about what's your genes and like you passing along mental illness and all of that. And then you can like, then honestly, it's just, my wife's very good. She's just like, if you go far back enough in anyone's lineage, there are mentally ill people. Like, all of us have mentally ill skeletons, and we all got great uncles, cousins, parents, siblings. Like, no one's escaping that. So absolutely. I really don't think you can be like, but my blood's poison. It's like, it's, you have no idea. It's such a DNA dice toss. Who knows what my wife's going to contribute? Who knows how it's going to be changed? I'm not a biochemist. And if you can be negative and pessimistic, or you can be optimistic and be like, I'm betting on the kids. They're going to handle it. I handled it. We'll cross the bridges when we get there. And maybe they'll be just fine. Like, I don't know.
Right.
So
you can provide them an environment where you're, I don't know, like, were your parents informed about this, or did they seek a diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, that's the also other thing where it's like, my parents couldn't have been better. We all had, you know, embraced therapy when it was needed at various points in our lives. They knew all about what was going on. We didn't shy things away from them. That, you know, it was like a hippie loving household that would, you know, of kind of clever children that were free to tell their parents whatever. Then when Lydia, my little sister, you know, died, it took me a while to get there, but I was like, this has nothing to do with almost nurture. You know what I mean? It's like her brain just unfortunately turned on her at 26 because of its chemistry. From 0 to 26, was she weird and OCD and great and quirky? Yeah, of course. But like, it got real severe then. And who knows why? And who knows, right, like, if she had persisted two more years, would she be like, and I'm better, like, I figured it out. So you can sit there and hand wring and be like, what if I bring children into this world? But ultimately you come away feeling like life is really precious, and like zooming out and being like, it's a gift that you have any time at all on the planet. So am I going to be miserable and worried the rest of my life? Or am I just going to kind of like say, fuck it and go for it? And who knows how long any of us have, but like, it is a gift. So let's try to soak it up, you know?
Yeah. When you just described your family and your setting as hippie-ish.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, well, so my dad's like a civil rights attorney. He came from like a rich family. His dad was an art dealer, and he was like, fuck you, I'm going to go to law school and do drugs and be a hippie.
I love that. That's the rebellion.
Yeah. And like, he, you know, he started, his first job was for a company called Legal Aid. So he's done a lot of like racial discrimination, basically like rage against the machine legally, like fuck it up. He's always suing the cops. And now my older sister works with him, and they've like, they've gotten people out of Guantanamo Bay. They're just like uber liberal,
whoa,
badass civil rights attorney.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So okay, they're just like changing the world that way. And my mom was a big, you know, I'm a hyphenated last name. It was because I'm a feminist, mm-hmm, and my kids are having my last name. And she was the editor in chief of her like college paper, and moved out here to be an investigative journalist. And so she met my dad writing about his stuff. That's who they were. They were like radical. We had all sorts of animals. It was just like a fun.
You had all household. Sorts of animals?
Yeah, we had so many fucking animals.
Like, do you mean dogs, cats, birds? What are we talking?
The height of it, we had like 3 dogs, 5 cats. My dad's allergic to cats, to give you an example of the power dynamic in that house. Hedgehogs, rats, turtles, rabbits.
Rats, white rats. Supposedly they're amazing pets.
I you know, I got to name them, a bunch of them, because there are always new ones coming and going. But but yeah, it was just a, and I was the little like OCD. My room was a temple. No one could go into my room. My room was clean. I would like tell them the house sucked. I don't want to, like, I was such a little shit. But it was a wild animal house for sure. I mean, they used to make fun of me because I would like come out of my room and be like, turn the TV down. It's like bedtime. Like, I was just this sort of.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah, I was that guy. The 5-year-old Malcolm, he's mini me for sure.
Really?
And he even looks like me. I liked control. I liked order. And yeah, my little dude is very much like that. He's like, he's the good guy. And why, if anyone's doing something bad, it's like, why aren't the police arresting him? And like
the narc, he's a narc.
My wife ran a red light, and he was like, I'm calling the police. I'm going to tell dad to call the police. And she's like, you know, it's like the tail end of a yellow. And he's like, he's like not buying the bullshit. He's like, we're calling the police. Well, and I'm also the son of my dad. So I'm like, you don't call the cops ever. Like, call us, call a lawyer. Don't talk to cops. Like, don't, like, period. But I have to be like, yeah, they're supposed to be, you know, and I'm already like, the good ones are very good, you know, and just trying to be like that type of dude.
You're rehearsing your speech.
Yeah. The job title is a noble title. In practice, I've found they tend to stray.
I'm very curious about this. I have done my share of therapy, and I've always wanted to try for trauma EDMR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
I've talked to some people who say it's changed their life, and other people who say it's snake oil, basically.
Yeah.
But you have done it, or maybe you continue to do it.
I don't continue to do it, but I have done it, and I'm a big champion of it.
Okay, so what is it exactly?
So basically, it's for trauma and PTSD. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'll just, this is all in my book, but like, I'll tell your listeners, I found my sister when she died. So that really messed me up. And
of course,
that was a memory that was like, reoccurring and nightmares and like obtrusive thoughts and all that stuff. And it fucked me up right good. So I was going to numerous therapies and like none of them were working. And I just given up and I was kind of a mess. But somebody eventually told me about EMDR and it is this like intense PTSD therapy. And basically they put like pulsers in your hand and the pulsers sort of vibrate back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you close your eyes. And your eyes sort of naturally follow that back and forth. You're like, you're tricking your brain into REM, into deep sleep, into thinking. So I don't think that's hypnosis, but like, I guess during REM, when you're sleeping, you sort of process everything you saw during the day. So it's you trick your brain into that. And then you go through the traumatic memory over and over and over and over and over again. The way my therapist likened it, they all like metaphors. Shrinks love metaphors for the brain. They all have one. Hers was your brain's a filing cabinet, and this memory that's plaguing you has become an errant file, and it's like loose. And so this is we're going to file this away in an orderly fashion. And me, the neurotic, I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And like, it was about controlling that memory and not having it control you. So anyway, I did this for like 10 sessions or something like that. And then literally it stopped. I had like a kind of powerful dream letting me know things are changing. And I like told my therapist, I was like, I think I'm done. I just came in one day and I was like, I think I'm done. And she's like, then you're done.
Oh, wow.
It really helped. It's like got me back on my feet. And I've become a champion for it and written stuff. And some people have told me it really messed them up and it was a terrible experience. And I always tell those people, I think I really lucked into a good therapist. And it's like anything. It's like,
yes,
there's good ones and bad ones. And this is very sensitive. Let's talk about your trauma over and over and over again. Like someone doing that, not amazingly, could be horrible. I think I fortunately found a really awesome therapist. I'm a big believer in it.
Do you find, you know, your creative work, whether you're writing, like as you did with writing a memoir or with stand-up, that this is me reframing things to have control
Maybe.
Over
it's
my
always
narrative?
So, it's always so pretentious to be like, and then I took my pain to my art and it healed me. So like basically when all this happened, I stopped doing comedy. Like I was just like, I'm done. I got nothing funny to say. And then, but it was still like this artistic impulse to like get it out and talk about it. So I just started writing stuff. And I also didn't think I was a good enough comedian to handle this on stage. You know what I mean? Like, what am I going to go into a nightclub and be like, so my sister killed herself. Like, here we go.
I've got 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And also in a weird way, I felt that if I was going to talk about my sister, who I really loved and admired and was very funny, and that I had to nail it. Like I couldn't do it clumsily. And so I felt like writing was a way that I could control it a little more. And so like I wrote a thing and put it on a blog and it like blew up. And that's how I got like a book deal.
Oh, wow.
And then writing that was like, the most cathartic thing, exactly what you're asking me about. Because, like, I didn't go in thinking, I've gathered my thoughts. Here's the book. I found my thoughts as I wrote it and cried and cried and cried. I was like, I think this means it's good. And really processed a lot through the writing of it.
You know, I was thinking about this, and I just love your take on it. Like, just what people throw out on stage in general has changed over the course of, like, when I've done stand-up. And I feel like I would look up to people and be like, oh, I love their stand-up. And then maybe I'd read a bio or a deep dive, like, interview with them and find out that they've been through all kinds of wild stuff. But you would never guess that from what they were putting out on stage.
Right.
And now I feel like it's a little bit like there's almost an expectation you're going to put all that out on stage.
I'll tell you, I've started doing like a one-man show, which is more the world that I think that can exist in. But I've only started doing it recently. And again, I think the book A, like, freed me. I was like, this is the story of Lydia. You're going to read it and you're going to like her and she would like it. That freed me. I was like, well, now I can be clumsy in another art form because I've done it. Mm-hmm. I think I got a swish with this one. That's the story of Lydia and I nailed it, in my opinion. And so, like, now I can go fuck it up somewhere else because I am a creative guy that wants to try different things. And also, Lydia was 11 years ago and I have become a better comedian. And now I feel like I'm more capable of talking about it on stage. So I started doing a one-man show that I don't do in comedy clubs, that I like ask for a theater and that the audience sort of knows, hey, there's like a serious story behind this. And it's funny and real, but it's like I respect the story enough to not trot it out in places where it doesn't belong. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. In a stand-up audience, there's one thing about like making everyone feel like, no, I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
Like there is, you have to be like, I have to take care of my audience.
Right.
And then there's a whole other thing about like, I'm okay. And now let's laugh at me about that. Like, you know, you have to sort of divide up these emotions.
And in a theater-ish audience, you can be like, oh, I'm still not okay. And they're like, cool, that's what we want to explore with you.
And we understand that that is like the human condition.
Totally.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I have some sort of rapid fire questions to throw at you to get your impressions on. Would you rather be cast as Ryder in Paw Patrol Comes Alive?
Or so like the stage Paw Patrol?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Or Steve in the new Blue's Clues series?
I would say Steve just because I haven't seen enough Blue's Clues to hate it as much as I hate Paw Patrol. So Blue's Clues, very well, I could hate it in a couple years and I will regret this choice currently. It's just a question mark, and that sounds great to the certainty of Paw Patrol.
Cast him in the unknown. I got it. Would you rather all four of you in your household have hand, foot, mouth disease, or you lose your wallet, phone, and passport and have to go through the logistics of canceling and replacing everything?
Wow. I haven't had hand, foot, and mouth, so I can't really
say. Fingers crossed.
But we are coming off a pink eye week, which has been pretty fun.
That's what's happening in my family.
Really?
Yeah.
I know for a fact it was from which kid it was from in my kid's class. I'm not going to name him on this podcast, but I know the exact kid it was. And it was this kid who last year had worms. So what is going on there?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you rather your sons be on the Denver Broncos or be part of a John Denver cover band?
Oh, wow. Both such terrible choices, because I don't, I don't want the CTE. I'm off the NFL. So I guess the John Denver cover band, but I'm a proud Colorado boy and I'm not into John Denver at all, dude. That's just not good music. And we're all, it's this Rocky Mountain fever dream that sucks. Like it's not good.
Okay. I read that you count your teeth as part of your OCD. You count your teeth.
Yep.
How many teeth do you have? How many teeth do humans have again?
Well, here's the thing. I wrote about my teeth and that I count them compulsively. And I always came up with 32, and we have 28. And so for years, I've been telling myself it's 32. And then I learned it was 28. And I wrote about like what a mind fuck that was.
Do you have wisdom teeth? Is that what that is?
You have 30 with wisdom teeth.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you just have two metaphorical teeth.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you still do that? Do you count them? Did you count them during this interview?
No, I think it's when, like, I'm present, I'm engaged. But when I think my brain wanders, I do stuff like that.
With your tongue, do you count them?
Uh-huh. Like, speed count them, touching everyone, just, like, darting across the mouth.
I kind of like that. Something you are looking forward to today to do with your kids?
So we take them to swimming on Tuesdays. And it's this place called Little Kickers. Lovely operation. They do a great job. There's a coffee shop right next door. You get a discount. And the boys are super into it. And if both of us can go, my wife and I go, and we sit and we watch them through the window for like 45 minutes. We'll maybe read. We hang out. It's just a very civilized experience. So I like Tuesday afternoons.
Okay. And something you are not looking forward to?
I mean, there's so many just perceived slights by my children at everything we're doing every day. This is a real punch to my face.
Just being roasted all the time.
So every night my wife and I switch which kid we're putting down. You know what I mean? Like you read the story to this one. And so they each get one parent the other night. And my boys just want mom and they're competitive about it. And so at dinner, whoever's night is the mom's night, they will go, "Mama's night for me," to the other one to like rub it in their face. And I just got to sit there and be like, "He's right. It's mama's night. You got to be stuck with old dog shit over here." And so like every day, it's just this indignity that I endure. As they like, one of them's like, "No, I got dad tonight." It's just like, cool guys.
It's nothing personal. You're a great dad.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're a great mom.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you. Thanks so much for reaching out through all the different channels to tell us how much you love this podcast. Feel free to keep doing it. If you haven't yet, subscribe. And if you know someone who has struggled or love someone who has struggled with mental health issues, I think Adam's perspective and his experiences and jokes about all of this will brighten their day. So, you know, pass along this episode to them. Coming up next week, I'm going to be talking to Caitlin Murray, who you probably know as Big Time Adulting on Instagram. She has taken over that social media platform by storm, and she makes me laugh every single day with just real talk and fuck it attitude. It makes me feel better. She also has a great podcast, so look forward to hearing her on ours. And if you haven't yet, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Parenting is a Joke. We're still on X at Parenting Joke. We have a Substack with new content every single week. Just go to Substack and search for Parenting is a Joke.
Hey, if you're in New York, I'm at the clubs all week, baby. Come find me. If you're listening to this podcast in real time tonight, I'm at the Music Hall of Williamsburg with The Moth. But you can find out all the details on my website, OphiraEisberg.com. Follow me everywhere, at Ophira E. I'm up to 24 push-ups in my self-inflicted push-up challenge, trying to get to 60 a day. You can see my progress on my IG stories, so check that out every day. Our episode is produced by me and Julie Smith-Clem. Our editor is Nina Porzucchi. Our sound designer is Tina Toby Mack. Our digital marketing is done by Laura Vogel. Our video editor is Melissa Weiss. Our overqualified intern is Jeffrey Kaufman. Thank you to all of the engineers at CityVox. And we'll leave you with more jokes from Adam.
In case you couldn't tell from my cardigan, I am here to talk about fatherhood tonight. Because I got two now. Second one conceived and born during the pandemic. Yeah, thanks. That means my wife and I, we took a look around at the state of the world, like what we saw. We're just like, yeah, let's double down on this. Things are going great. Let's put another one out there. I'll never forget the moment we decided we were in the backyard because that was all we were allowed to do by the CDC and... It was just the height of the George Floyd protests, and there was a police helicopter flying overhead, but you couldn't even look up to see it because literal ash was raining from the sky from I can't even remember which wildfire it was that season, and America was as divided as it had been since the Civil War, and I just thought to myself, you know, it'll fix this. Another white dude. Yeah. You know, let's just throw another white dude at the situation. Honey, finish up your Chablis and get inside. Tonight is about solutions.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.